This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
Welcome back to the Power Hour. I have to change the way I'm connecting here. Right as we're about to go on, the internet goes out. I mean, this, when we have important interviews, this is the kind of thing that happens, ladies and gentlemen. Our next guest is very important. It was Stalin is credited as saying it, but I think it was one of his henchmen. It says, "You show me the man and I'll provide you the crime." Not even "I'll show you the crime," "I'll provide you the crime." And it was Hiram Mann who said, "No man survives when freedom fails. The best men rot in filthy jails. And those who cry, appease, appease, are hanged by those they try to please." Well, that's where we stand, ladies and gentlemen. Does this mirror 1770 Samuel Adams? Yes, it does. A very important story. Not a farmer in the middle of the Nevada desert, Clive and Bundy, not your neighbor, a congressman. A congressman who stood for the Constitution, who stood for God, who stood for his principles, who came out against the IRS and said that Lois Lerner needs to be indicted. She needs to tell how she colluded against conservative voices. We know that she did. Well, he's in jail right now. He's been railroaded, and people, as they're finding out, are outraged. We are very honored that Patty, this may be one of the first interviews she has done on this. I don't know, and I know it's got to be one of the first. It just happened. He is in jail right now. Steve Stockman, the two-time congressman from the 36th District in Texas. We're very, very happy to welcome his wife, Patty. Patty Stockman, welcome to the Power Hour.
Thank you, Daniel. It's great to be with you. I really appreciate you having me.
Well, you know, whatever we can do is small sacrifice of what you've already paid your family. Let's just give a little background on you, your family. Let's go maybe to happier times. In the 90s, that's when Steve first got involved in Congress. He was a two-time congressman. Talk about that a little bit, your family, why he got involved in Congress. What was that like running and then winning?
Okay. Well, actually, Steve and I got married in December 1988. And we got married in December because we had to get married while Ronald Reagan was still in the White House. Steve did not want to get married under George Bush because if you send an invitation to, people may not know this, if you send a wedding invitation to the White House, you'll get a nice congratulatory card back from them. And so we wanted one from Reagan, not from Bush. And that was the only time we could find on our pastor's schedule and Steve's schedule that worked. So anyway, we got married December 88, and it was the next, was it that year, well, the next year, you know, after the first of the year, in the summertime, Steve was at the time state chairman of Young Conservatives of Texas, and he was also working three jobs and, you know, quite a busy guy, but he organized a counter-protest against liberal downtown Houston, protests they were going to be doing, and he had organized folks from across all kinds of clubs and organizations. It was quite a coalition of conservatives, very much like Tea Party kind of gatherings. But anyway, afterwards it was quite hot. A number of us from our area gathered together to cool off with some lemonade and whatever, and we were lamenting the fact that our congressman, Jack Brooks of Texas, who was there forever and a day, had not had an opponent ever the previous year in 88 when we got married, neither Democrat nor Republican. So we were saying, we got to find someone to run. And one of the folks there said, "Well, Steve, what about you?" Steve said, "Me?" And I said, "Steve?" And they said, "Why not?" He was quite an organizer and very, very sharp on issues. And so on the way, on the drive home, I had kind of talked to Zeroff and said, "Look, you know, we just got married. You're working three jobs. You're working finishing your degree. You're state chairman of Young Conservative Texas. Don't you think you have enough on your plate?" And he said, "Well, yeah, probably." Well, we got home and had a message on our answering machine. In those days, we still had answering machines. And it was from a fellow who had not been there during our discussion at all. And he, in the message said, "Steve, I heard a an announcement on the radio, and I don't know if you want to pass it along. Surely you know someone who'd be interested, but it said, if there's anyone interested in running for Congress against Jack Brooks in Texas, please call this number, yada, yada, yada.
Wow.
I know. We looked at one another just aghast, and Steve said, well, what do you think? And I said, well, that can't be coincidence. So long story short, we wound up running the next year. That would have been 1990. There was another primary opponent, actually, who was, in truth, the Democrat mayor of Beaumont, Texas, but he made a switch and ran in the Republican primary. Won it because he had some name ID, and Steve didn't, and lost embarrassingly that year in the general. So in 92, after much prayer, and that's a long story in itself, we decided, okay, let's do it again. We did. Steve had the primary opponent, and he won the primary, but lost the general, but held Jack Brooks to the lowest percentage of votes he had ever gotten in his entire career. We took that as confirmation we were doing the right thing and never lost momentum. So he ran again in 94. Well, just kind of didn't stop running. And I'm here to tell you, it was truly God's hand. I mean, people from across the district just rose up. It was exactly like the Tea Party that we saw rise up, but it was before the Tea Party. It was just good Americans that were tired of business as usual in Washington. And Steve sounded the message, hey, we've got to change things. 42 years is enough. And so we were able to defeat Jack Brooks, who had been there 42 years, went to Congress the same year that Ozzie and Harriet moved from the radio to television.
Oh, my gosh. Wow. That tells you something.
So it was a huge, huge victory. It would have been a major national news, and it kind of was, except that's the year that the Republicans took the House. So it kind of got overshadowed. Anyway, that put a huge target on Steve. He served on one of the committees in Congress that investigated the Whitewater debacle with the Clintons, and he just stood for Second Amendment rights. And he's always been well known as a Second Amendment guy, and so many other issues that are conservative, godly issues, as you said. And he was just staunch, uncompromising on all of them, and people loved him. So even though he had a target on him in 96, he was the number one target in the nation for the national labor unions as well as the Democrat Party, and they barely defeated him with over 100% turnout in some precincts over near Louisiana.
Did you say over 100? So it reminds you of what's going on in Florida right now. It's like deja vu all over again.
Exactly. Yeah. Our district borders Louisiana, and he used to say, I think some of the books on how to steal elections fell off the truck on the way to Louisiana.
Yeah, cute, funny. Yeah, real funny if it wasn't so true.
In a nutshell, we basically spent pretty much the whole first decade of our marriage running for office. So during that time, you ask about family. During that time, I was an older bride, and it was really my childbearing years that we were doing this. And I thought, you know, this is not the lifestyle in which to bring a baby, because I was always involved, very involved and on the go, and it was just craziness. Several of the years the campaign was out of our house, and so it was just, you didn't have a normal home life. And so after Steve was in office, at one point I was walking across site at work, and it dawned on me just out of the blue, Patty, you know, you're not going to have children. And I was overcome with grief, but almost as quickly recovered with a thought, I believe, truly given by God, that was, you know, this is just a sacrifice that you're making so other people's children can grow up in the kind of America you grew up in. And it was just a burden lifted almost as suddenly as it had come. And I've always just turned back to that and taken comfort in the fact that, you know, it's just one of the decisions that we made to try to save this nation.
Let's go forward to 2012. Steve, I believe, was elected again. And that was a time when I first heard about Steve, become conscious. I saw him on, you know, cable news, different things, and speaking out very aggressively against Obama, speaking out especially guns, like you mentioned, different things. That, talk about that time, how you came to be reelected, and then the pressure that Steve began to bring on the establishment.
Right. So in 2012, Texas, due to redistricting, Texas gained three or four new congressional House seats. And one of them included much of the same district that he had represented in the 90s. And so we prayed and we just decided, you know, this looked like a good time to go back into the arena. And he defeated, I can't remember if there were 12 or 13 primary opponents, because this district is heavily Republican. And so he ran, he defeated them all. It had a runoff with the with the wealthiest of them, among them, and then handily won the general. So when he went back to Congress, he was, as you said, he was just out there. Steve does things in a very bold way and very public way. Just 2 weeks after being sworn in, he issued a press release, because it was right after Sandy Hook elementary shooting, and he issued a press release that said, if the president oversteps his authority through the use of executive orders to limit Second Amendment rights, I will consider all avenues at my disposal. We will consider all avenues at our disposal to try to stop him from, you know, withholding funds, to some sort of legislative action, to this or that, and if need be, even considering articles of impeachment. Well, boom, the headline said, Congressman threatens impeachment, which it was just an option that he mentioned. But so he immediately was on two Fox News shows, I think, and radio shows all across the country, and the headlines and the Drudge Report. In fact, he took so many bold stands. I'm told that he was mentioned more on Drudge in the term that he was in Congress that time than all the other members combined. I don't know if that's true. I haven't been able to substantiate it, but he was in the press a lot. He blocked both a Senate immigration bill and a Senate gun control bill from even coming to the House by looking back in history and finding a little known procedure that hadn't been used very much. And so he blocked them from even coming to the House. So he made that announcement 2 weeks after he was sworn in. Two more weeks was the State of the Union address, and he invited Ted Nugent, who was an NRA board member, to be his guest at the State of the Union address.
There's the music. Let's hold right there, Patty. That's a good place to break. On the other side, Ted Nugent at the State of the Union. You'll love it. DefendThePatriot.com is the website. DefendThePatriot.com. You can learn more. We're going to have videos up on our website. We'll give you some places you can text to donate. Steve is in jail right now, ladies and gentlemen. This is important. Stay tuned. Steve Stockman, the two-time congressman out of Texas, 36th District there. A couple ways you can help him. Well, you can text the word FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, FIGHT to 444-999, that will to donate, or you can go to defendthepatriot.com. You can get more information. You can sign a petition. You can, you know, find out different ways to help. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a congressman. This is, you know, maybe you would say he was the prototype for Donald Trump. Maybe Donald Trump became the Stockman of the presidency. Maybe that's a better way to say it. He was Donald Trump before Donald Trump was Donald Trump. He was Steve Stockman, and there in Texas, and he didn't pull any punches, and you talk about draining the swamp or going right after the target, that was Steve. Patty, why don't you tell a little bit about some of the things he did and how aggressively he did them that put him on the radar of some pretty powerful forces.
Sure. So after the whole gun thing with threatening impeachment and bringing Ted Nugent, he also he was the first to expose Obama's ransom payment to the Hakati terrorist network for ransom for the traitor Bo Bergdahl. He exposed Hillary's violation of the Iran sanctions when she allowed sale of specialized steel to Iran by one of the Clinton Foundation's largest donors. This is steel that's used in nuclear weaponry construction. And there's just so many things, I can't even name them all. You'll see a lot of it there on the internet if you go and check out the website. But one of the big things he did was he filed a bill, a resolution in the House calling for the arrest of Lois Lerner, because your listeners probably will remember she refused to testify and produce emails and cooperate with the congressional investigation of the IRS harassment of Tea Parties and other conservative organizations. Lois Lerner oversaw, she was the director of the IRS nonprofit division that granted licenses and oversaw the operation of nonprofit organizations. So he filed that bill and was on the Megyn Kelly report and on Fox News. He was on, on the Fox Business Channel. I'm drawing a blank. Great guy. Lou Dobbs. In the same time frame, he was on both their shows. Well, 2 weeks later, the FBI showed up at his apartment door. The investigation was already underway, and they had convened a grand jury already, but they changed teams. They totally dropped one team when the first grand jury came up with no indictments, and they changed teams entirely and brought on more aggressive, well-known aggressive agents. They convened two more grand juries, so they convened three grand juries in the course of a four-year period before finally a fourth grand jury indicted Steve. They couldn't get an indictment. So it's like a police officer pulling you over for a red light that you didn't run but saying you did, and then taking you before three different judges to get agreement with him that you were guilty of running the red light.
What did you feel? What did your family, we just have about a minute and a half before the break, what did you feel as this went on? What did Steve feel, your family?
Well, the family really is just Steve and me, since we don't have children. And we didn't talk about it. We didn't talk about it because counsel had told Steve not to talk about it. If he didn't talk about it, they couldn't talk about it. So he followed advice and didn't. So it was just he and I that really knew, and his attorney that he had it first. And I have to tell you, Steve traveled extensively internationally because that's his forte. So there were many weeks that I was home alone. And when he was in office, I was home in Texas and he was not. And I expected to hear any time, because I knew about this Justice Department. So I was on pins and needles thinking, you know, they may bang in the door any time, or I might get a call saying, hey, I've been arrested. I just did not know what to expect. It was very, very, very tense.
Did you, in hindsight, 30 seconds, in hindsight, was it a mistake not to talk? Do you wish you would have talked?
Yes. In hindsight, Steve wishes he would have talked. Definitely wishes he would have talked all along the way, including leading up to the trial, which he still did not because he had been advised not to. But he regrets that.
Yeah, we're going to break. Well, on the other side, we'll continue with this important story. He just got sentenced recently. Some of the details of the trial maybe we'll get out. Text FIGHT to 444-999. FIGHT 444-999 to donate to Steve's cause, and go to defendthepatriot.com. Defendthepatriot.com.
What are we doing here in this country? What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? If you were to ask somebody, what is a deep state? Or if you say, oh, there's no such thing as a deep state. You need proof. You need evidence. Look at this case. Look at this situation. And what does it say about you? You remember the famous, it was a preacher. I don't have the quote in front of me, but you remember in Nazi Germany, he said, they went for the unionists and I wasn't a unionist, so I didn't say anything. Then they went for the whatever, you know, then they went for the Jews. And finally they came for me and nobody was left to speak out for me. We are living in the craziest and most vulnerable, listen to me, ladies and gentlemen, I promise you. We are living in the most vulnerable time for the republic of this nation since probably New Year's Eve or Christmas Eve in 1776 when Washington was sitting there on the Delaware River right now. We also have, just like Washington at that time, we have the biggest opportunity. Patriots. Men who have freedom in their blood. Men who understand the endowment of their Creator. Who believe in the Declaration of Independence. Who believe in the freedom and inheritance been placed and the crown been placed on their head by something greater than government. That something, the core existence, have been inspired to act in this country unlike any country we have ever seen. It is a miracle on top of miracle. You want to read about the Red Sea being parted? This is a greater miracle, ladies and gentlemen, that occurred against the tide of history. And a man like Steve Stockman, his wife, all they have sacrificed. You know, we all the time say we want a man, you know, we want Donald Trump to go in there and drain the swamp. Well, go drain the swamp. Go arrest them all. Go get da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Now you're starting to see a congressman, two-time congressman, who just speaks out, just normal things. Hey, Lois Lerner is in contempt of court. She's in the IRS, and she's going after conservative groups. She's admitted to it. She won't give the evidence. Eric Holder, who's already in contempt of court for Fast and Furious, not giving the documents of what they're doing. Something's wrong here. We need to arrest her and get her information. That's just common sense. And nothing happened. Except the man who spoke out, the nail who came up out of the wood, so to speak, and poked his head up and dared to speak for you, speak for America, to speak for Thomas Jefferson, to speak for Samuel Adams, speak for Patrick Henry, he gets hammered down by a Justice Department used as a tool, a political tool, to execute the destruction of the spirit of America. It is disgusting. It is heartbreaking. My heart, my prayers, my energy, this show, hopefully this audience, are behind Patty and Steve, and we thank them for their sacrifice and thank them for what they're doing right now and running up against the barbed wire. Because if we don't stop this, ladies and gentlemen, what do you think is next? There is no compromise with the force that is upon us. There will be no quarter, and it will be one or the other. It is a cage match. And we have all the power, but we've let them convince us that we are grasshoppers in their sight. Getting back to Patty Stockman, she's talking about the trial. They were recommended by their attorney to be, you know, fairly quiet about the situation. And look where it got them. What else can they do to them? Now she's speaking out, getting some attention. DefendThePatriot.com is the website. You can learn more about this. You can text FIGHT, the word FIGHT, to 444-999 to donate. Patty, please continue with your story. When you're going through this trial, I mean, you and Steve got to be going crazy. It's got to be surreal. Like, can the Department of Justice, our Department of Justice, even do this? It's got to be crazy.
Right, it was. And I cannot, and by the way, I just have to say, you're so spot on, and you've already used two quotes that I use from time to time as well. And I've thought often, Daniel, about how if this can happen to Steve Stockman. Steve and I just live in a tract home in typical suburban area of the Houston area, a little tract home we've had for over 30 years, and he was not wealthy. We were not wealthy when he ran for and won a seat in Congress. It was truly the grassroots and God's hand that put him there. So if this can happen to Steve Stockman, I have often thought, people just don't realize this could easily happen to them. And so many folks see all the smoke with it, the prosecution is spewed out and all the allegations, and they think, well, I know they're thinking, well, there's got to be some guilt there. There's just got to be some guilt because all of that, they would never be able to convince a jury. But I have learned so much, and so has Steve, about this quote, justice process. It's just mind-boggling. Your listeners, probably some of them know, but probably all of them don't know. I mentioned four grand juries before they finally, with the fourth, got an indictment. A grand jury is convened, and again, I hope I'm not boring the audience, but a grand jury is convened for the prosecution to present evidence, whatever evidence they select and whatever evidence they choose to withhold, to paint a story to some grand jurors and get them to say, yeah, it looks to us like there's enough evidence here that this fellow might be guilty, and they go with an indictment. But there's no judge that presides. No one like that presides. It's just the prosecution and the grand jury. And I learned in reading some of the transcripts of some of the grand jury sessions that were held that even the witnesses who were called are not allowed to have an attorney present in the grand jury courtroom. Their attorneys have to wait outside in the hallway or somewhere outside the room, and if the witness at any point feels like they really need to consult with their attorney, well, they put everything on pause, they let them step out, talk to their attorney, and come back. But the attorney's operating in a vacuum except for what their client tells them. I was just appalled to see how that operates. And so the jury gets a one-sided picture. There is no defense. Steve was not, had some of the witnesses not told his attorney what transpired. And there would be a lot of dark hole because you don't get the transcripts until trial time or until, after the indictment. So, they called people before grand. Go ahead. Sorry.
One thing I forgot to talk about, we got so caught up in this, but talk about the charge. What charge did the grand jury eventually come down with?
Finally. Well, there were 24 charges, and your listeners will see on the Internet. Basically, all of them stem from four donations, four checks that were written to two different nonprofits, three to one nonprofit that was a 501c3 that did a lot of transmission of medical supplies to Africa and other, and just helping other needy folks. And then also it had an educational bent, so it did a lot of educational efforts, particularly after Steve was in office. And Steve had fundraised for and helped operate the nonprofit before he went back to Congress. After he went back to Congress, he learned that he needed to terminate his connection with it. So he did, and everything transferred to an associate. And besides, he was too busy doing his congressional job, even if he had wanted to stay involved. But anyway, so that was the first nonprofit. The other one was a 501c4, which your listeners will recognize. A lot of those organizations are ones that run advertisements or mailings in different campaigns that don't necessarily advocate for one candidate or another, as this one did not. But it published a voter educational piece during the Senate primary, because instead of running for reelection in 2014, Steve left his seat in Congress to run in the primary, Senate primary, against John Cornyn, because we felt like we needed another senator who would stand with Ted Cruz. So the 501c4 was independent of Steve. He had no involvement with it, though the prosecution convinced the jury through the testimony of the fellow who ran it, pled guilty, and he testified that He didn't take a breath or step right or left without Steve telling him to do it. So anyway, the charges that stemmed from those that kind of fell out of them, for those four checks, what they do is they stack up charges. So each one of those checks carried, not everyone, I don't have them all committed to memory, but multiple checks carried the charge of mail fraud, wire fraud, conspiracy, lying, money laundering, etc.
There's the music. Hold that thought. On the other side, we'll get some concluding thoughts. What contact do you have with Steve? Where is he? Do you see him? Those kind of things. We'll get to those right on the other side. ThePowerHour.com. is our website, defendthepatriot.com. Defendthepatriot.com. Welcome back to the Power Hour. Last segment with a very courageous and prayer-needing woman, the one we're talking to, Patty Stockman, wife of Steve Stockman, the two-time congressman out of Texas there, who has found himself a pretty obvious target of political one-upsmanship, political retribution for his wanting to get there and drain the swamp. I mean, he was doing it, going after. Let's do it. And this is what the price that he has paid. Let's talk a little bit about, as you've gone through this, as you and Steve have talked, what's your feeling about this, the state of America, where we are? I mean, this whole thing has got to certainly focus your attention.
Right. Well, this Steve's case is tragic. It is a horrible, in my opinion, miscarriage of justice, and it's a horrible experience for Steve to go through. I truly can't imagine his experience myself. I know he doesn't share with me probably some of his down times, but he I'll come back to that in a minute. But so it's a terrible experience for the two of us and those who love us. But it is so much bigger, like you're saying, Daniel, it's so much bigger than Steve Stockman. And conservatives are being brought down by this Justice Department regularly. I mean, just in the past 4 months, I think, they indicted two more conservative congressmen, one from New York, Chris, I'm drawing a blank on his last name, and Duncan Hunter from California. Now, I understand, I'm told that Duncan truly did have some issues, some problems, but what we're seeing is that, and Steve has particularly commented on to me, is what we're seeing is the Justice Department is usurping more administrative agency issues, like the FEC, the Federal Election Commission, should have handled issues that seem campaign finance related. And the SEC should have handled one of the complaints that's being brought against the New York congressman, and the IRS audit division should handle some of the IRS issues, et cetera. So they're usurping these administrative agencies' responsibilities and turning them into felonies. The things that Steve was charged with are really quite trumped up. They're not, he did nothing that's felonious. He did nothing felonious, and much of what they presented is just outright false, just false. But Steve is just an example. Jerome Corsi, who's a conservative author probably most of your listeners are familiar with, he's about to be indicted, he believes. And we just are seeing it all around us. And like you said earlier, it may be you tomorrow. I mean, you're such an outspoken conservative on the radio. It may be you tomorrow. It's just outrageous what's happening in our country, and it definitely needs to be cleaned out, gotten to the bottom of, and yanked out by the roots.
How do we do that? How do we do that?
It's going to have to, in my opinion, be led by Trump, who's up there to drain the swamp and tell the truth, and he doesn't give a rip. I really do believe that probably most others in office are too afraid to be as bold as Trump is. And that's kind of that's the way my husband was. He just told it like it was, and even some of his own fellow conservatives in the House told him a couple of times, Stockman, you better be careful. But Steve didn't go up there to be careful or to get reelected, kind of like Trump. He went up there to do what was right. And, you know, we've got a number of really good, outspoken congressmen, but I don't know that even Ted Cruz, who we absolutely love, that he would have been as bold in the White House as Trump is calling a spade a spade. And so someone has to bring it to the president's attention, and I think they are looking at justice reform is what I understand. So
Go ahead.
Just one quick thing. I should tell you and your listeners both that the case brought against Steve and prosecuted against Steve was the same partnership that went after the Tea Parties. It's not only the Justice Department, but it's the nonprofit division of the IRS, Lois Lerner's old division. And in fact, one of the signatories on the indictment of Steve was kind of carbon copied by Lerner on one of her emails to the Justice Department that Judicial Watch released when she was arranging to meet with them to go target the conservatives. Yeah, very interesting, isn't it? Interesting.
Yeah. Well, we got about 2 or 3 minutes. Where is this case now? Appeals, a chance about pardons, getting in Trump's ear or somebody? Are we with all those kind of things?
Right. So we cannot even file that we are going to appeal until after the sentence. And so I think there is something like a 30. We still can't file appeal until after the court reporters have finished recording the entire proceeding. So they've got to pull it all together from the last hearing and put it all together in one big package. And then we can file for appeal, which we had poor defense, very poor defense, in my opinion, because we couldn't afford better. And so this time we're really trying to raise funds to hire a powerhouse attorney for appeal. And so the appeal actually... We file in about 30, 45 days, we file that we are going to appeal. And then I think the appeal has to be filed within like 3 or 4 months. I'm not real clear on all of that. But I am kind of double tracking because every time I see Steve, I take notes and I've come away with at least 3 pages of handwritten notes of things to do. I'm going to be pursuing a presidential pardon since President Trump seems to like to pardon people worthy of it. And so I've been collecting letters from very key, recognizable, prominent folks that your listeners would know. I'd rather not go into collecting letters to the president from them, asking him to pardon them. And there's a petition on the website that your listeners can sign up to have their names and cities and states added to, and I will add your names. And then I'm going to be pursuing, and I am pursuing, multiple avenues to try to get the package to the president rather than through the U.S. mail where it'll get lost in the White House bureaucracy,
yes.
I'm quite sure.
Well, we proclaim peace to you, and for the many balls that you're juggling in the air, we also proclaim liberty to you, to Steve, to everybody out there, that rightness, that truth may prevail. I mean, this is God's country and a God of liberty, at least at one time it was, and those who work for liberty, we proclaim protection upon them now. In God's name, it is done, it is done, it is done. Patty Stockman, it has been an absolute pleasure, and you have friends here and advocates here. Anything that you need that we can do, please let us know.
Thank you so much, Daniel. God bless you guys and your listeners as well.